Welcome, everybody, to History Analyzed. I'm your host, Mark Palmer. This is a podcast which examines historical events and issues. The person we're analyzing today is Cleopatra. There are so few women in history that are remembered, and it's for good reason. Women were completely disenfranchised and usually treated like chattel throughout most of history. Unfortunately, that still goes on in a few countries today. But even with the total male-dominated societies, some women were able to defy the odds and have a major impact on history. Cleopatra is one of those women. Before I go further, let me advise you that we don't have a lot of detailed facts about Cleopatra. We don't have any Egyptian sources about her. All of our information about Cleopatra comes from the Romans. And the Romans, on the whole, were not thrilled with her. They viewed her as a foreign queen who they feared and reviled. So with that caveat, I'll go on. Cleopatra was born in the year 69 BCE. Now let's put that into perspective. Although she was born almost 21 centuries ago, she was still closer to our time than she was to the building of the Great Pyramid in Giza, which was built 25 centuries before Cleopatra was born. The Kingdom of Egypt had existed for a very long time. Cleopatra was born into the ruling family of Egypt. However, she was not ethnically Egyptian. She was ethnically Greek. Why was this? Well, it's due to the lasting effects of Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great conquered much of the known world, including Egypt, in the 300s BCE. However, he died as a young man. He was only 32 years old when he died in the year 323 BCE. When Alexander died, the empire he had conquered split into several pieces governed by his different generals. One of his generals was Ptolemy. And by the way, that's spelled with a silent P, P-T-O-L-E-M-Y. Ptolemy took control of Egypt and installed his own dynasty, which lasted for almost three centuries. That dynasty ended with the death of Cleopatra. When I say Cleopatra was ethnically Greek, I know some people would want to argue that Alexander and Ptolemy were from Macedonia, which was on the northern edges of Greece, but not actually part of Greece. And although there are some fights about whether the people from Macedonia qualified as Greek, the language they spoke was Greek, the culture that they spread throughout the Eastern Mediterranean, and all the cities that they built were Greek. So I'm just going to refer to them as Greeks. Before Alexander conquered Egypt, the kingdom was split into two parts, Upper Egypt and Lower Egypt. When they described Upper Egypt, that meant the beginning parts of the Nile River, and Lower Egypt meant the ending parts of the Nile River. So though it seems strange when looking at a modern map, Upper Egypt was to the south and Lower Egypt was to the north. You have to keep in mind that the orientation we use on maps has no relation to nature. It's just something that, by convention, we draw maps with north at the top and south at the bottom. There were two ancient capitals of Egypt, Memphis and Thebes. This changed when Alexander arrived. Alexander founded a new city on the Mediterranean coast where the Nile Delta poured into the Mediterranean Sea. And what did he name that city? Alexandria. A little on the nose, don't you think? He was a great general with a tremendous ego and founded cities throughout the lands he conquered. He named over 70 cities Alexandria. Alexandria, Egypt would have the biggest impact. Since the city was created by Alexander the Great, it was designed as a Greek-style city. This meant that the layout of the city and the buildings were Greek and not native Egyptian. The Ptolemy dynasty and government spoke Greek as their first language. Until Cleopatra came along, none of the Ptolemy rulers of Egypt spoke native Egyptian. She was the first one to learn the language of the people she governed. In fact, she was quite impressive and reportedly spoke nine languages, most importantly Greek, Egyptian, and Latin, so she could deal with the Romans. As I told you earlier, Cleopatra was born in 69 BCE. Her father was Ptolemy the 12th. It gets confusing because all of the men in this dynasty were named Ptolemy. So we use numbers to keep them separate. In Greek, the name Cleopatra meant glory of the father. Unfortunately, there are also a lot of Cleopatras in the history of the Ptolemy dynasty. Officially, the woman we're talking about was Cleopatra VII, but people just usually refer to her as Cleopatra because she's the only famous one. Cleopatra was the oldest child. She had a younger sister named Arsinoe. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Frankly, I don't know. And two brothers named Ptolemy XIII and Ptolemy XIV. I warned you, all the males were named Ptolemy. As Cleopatra was growing up, her father was the king of Egypt. But during her father's reign, the Romans controlled most of the Mediterranean world. Technically, it was not yet the Roman Empire. It was still the Republic of Rome, which was really just a nice euphemism. To the people of the conquered provinces, it was essentially a Roman Empire. It just meant that technically the Senate was still in charge and there was no emperor. Cleopatra's father, Ptolemy XII, kept Egypt as a separate country by lavishing gifts on influential Romans, which were essentially bribes. Since there was no single emperor of Rome yet, King Ptolemy had to make sure he was paying the right Romans. Cleopatra's father died in March of 51 BCE. This meant that Cleopatra became Queen of Egypt. However, women were not entitled to rule by themselves. So, in her father's will, it was stated that she would be joint ruler with her younger brother, Ptolemy XIII, who was only 11 years old at that time. And now for the creepy part. As part of her father's will, Cleopatra married her younger brother, Ptolemy XIII. This was a common practice in the Ptolemy dynasty. Cleopatra never had any children with her brother, and as far as we know, the marriage was never consummated. It was merely for appearances so they could act as co-rulers as husband and wife. After 3 years of jointly ruling Egypt, the 14-year-old Ptolemy XIII tried to depose his sister. Although they were officially joint rulers as king and queen, Cleopatra was the one really running the country. Her face appeared on the minted coins, and her name was on official documents. Her little brother did not like this. The 14-year-old king, with the assistance of his regent, forced Cleopatra to leave Egypt and flee to Syria. But Cleopatra was a badass. She raised her own army and returned to Egypt, and a civil war broke out. The Egyptian civil war was a localized affair. But there was another civil war at that time that involved the entire Mediterranean world. There was a civil war among the Romans, with Julius Caesar on one side and Pompey Magnus on the other side. It's a very long and very interesting story that I can't go into here because I'm trying to keep the focus on Cleopatra. For our purposes, a major turning point in the Roman civil war occurred when Caesar beat Pompey at the Battle of Pharsalus in central Greece on August 9, 48 BCE. Although the army under Pompey was wiped out, Pompey himself escaped from Greece to Alexandria, Egypt, where he thought he had connections with the government of King Ptolemy XIII. However, the advisors around the 14-year-old Egyptian king had heard that Caesar had won the Roman civil war and that Pompey was essentially finished. So, when Pompey arrived in Alexandria on September 28, 48 BCE, instead of the warm welcome he expected, the representatives of Ptolemy cut off his head. Caesar arrived a few days after Pompey had been killed. When he was presented with Pompey's severed head, instead of being pleased, Caesar was distraught that a client kingdom like Egypt would dare decapitate a former consul of Rome. Caesar decided to stay in Egypt. He moved into the royal palace in Alexandria. Before Pompey and Caesar arrived in Alexandria, Cleopatra had been losing her civil war against her brother. As a result, she had to flee the capital, but she continued to wage war against her brother even though it was not going well for her. When Cleopatra heard about Pompey's death and the fact that Caesar was remaining in Egypt, she thought that this was her chance. Ptolemy XIII certainly did not want to have his sister join forces with Caesar. So she had to be smuggled in to Alexandria to meet with Caesar. There are variations on the story about how she snuck into the royal palace for this meeting. The most famous one is that she was rolled up in a rug and carried in by some servants, but it appears that she was actually smuggled into the palace inside a laundry basket. However she got in, she accomplished her goal. The 21-year-old Cleopatra charmed and seduced the 52-year-old Julius Caesar. And we always hear about how beautiful Cleopatra was. Although she's often described that way, we really have no idea what she actually looked like. Purportedly, she was attractive, but it wasn't just her looks that captivated Caesar. She was brilliant. As I stated earlier, she could speak 9 languages, so she could converse with Caesar in either Greek or Latin, the 2 languages that all the Romans spoke. By the way, Latin was the native language of the Romans, but since the whole eastern half of the Mediterranean spoke Greek, most Romans were also fluent in Greek. Cleopatra was also supposed to have been very witty and charming, and apparently Caesar was impressed with her political skills. The fact that she was a queen who had been running a country at such a young age was remarkable. Although Cleopatra had been losing the civil war to her brother, Caesar declared that Cleopatra and Ptolemy XIII would rule as co-sovereigns pursuant to the will of their father. Ptolemy XIII and his advisors did not like this arrangement. They figured they had been winning the civil war before Caesar got there. They were in control of the capital. Why should he now have to share power with his older sister? Added to this was the fact that Ptolemy's army numbered around 20,000 soldiers. And although he had a lot of troops elsewhere, Caesar had only about 4,000 soldiers with him in Egypt. So Ptolemy's forces attacked the Romans. And although this is a great story, I don't want to get bogged down with too much about Julius Caesar because I'm trying to keep us focused on Cleopatra. Suffice it to say that Caesar is one of the 3 greatest generals of all time, along with Alexander and Napoleon, and was ultimately able to defeat Ptolemy XIII's army in 47 BCE. As a result of this war, Ptolemy XIII was dead. He was actually not killed in battle. He drowned in the Nile River. This left Cleopatra as the queen of Egypt. She understood that she could only remain as queen as long as the Romans permitted this. And since the Roman civil war had apparently been won by Julius Caesar, she understood that she only needed to have Caesar on her side. Caesar announced that Cleopatra would be queen, but would have to be a co-monarchy because, again, queens were not allowed to rule by themselves. So Caesar declared that Cleopatra's other brother, Ptolemy XIV, would be co-ruler with her. Ptolemy XIV was only 12 years old at this time, but it was made clear to him that he was named as co-monarch for appearances only, and Cleopatra would be in charge. And although she now was married to this brother, Cleopatra continued to live in Alexandria with Caesar in the royal palace. It appears that Caesar and Cleopatra were genuinely fond of each other. They took a very long pleasure cruise up the Nile River. Now, one thing that helped Cleopatra's relationship with Caesar is that she had a child with him on June 23, 47 BCE. However, Caesar had left Egypt 2 months before the baby was born and did not see the baby at that time. Caesar had some military and political matters to take care of in Rome and in the provinces. Fun fact, while carrying on this affair and having a child with Cleopatra, Caesar had a wife named Calpurnia back in Rome. He may have enjoyed his relationship with Cleopatra, but as a leader of Rome, he could not marry a foreigner. Caesar and Cleopatra's son was named, you guessed it, Ptolemy XV. However, he's usually referred to in history by the nickname that everybody called him at the time, Caesarion, which is spelled C-A-E-S-A-R-I-O-N. And this is not to be confused with the medical procedure cesarean section, which is spelled differently. The nickname cesarean meant little Caesar, and no, he had nothing to do with the pizza chain. To avoid confusion, I will only refer to their son by his nickname cesarean. That's pretty much how he's known throughout history anyway. And also, there are way too many Ptolemies in the story. Caesar never publicly acknowledged Caesarion as his son, but he also did not repudiate him. Cleopatra made sure that everybody knew who Caesarion's father was. When Julius Caesar departed Egypt in April 47 BCE, he left 3 legions of Roman troops to support Cleopatra's rule. So as long as Caesar was around, she had the military backing to remain as queen of Egypt. Cleopatra wanted to make sure that she still had a strong relationship with Julius Caesar. So a year and a half later, Cleopatra and her brother, Ptolemy XIV, visited Rome. It's unclear whether Caesarion remained in Alexandria or went to Rome with her. My guess is that she would have brought Caesarion to Rome as she was trying to cement her relationship with Julius Caesar and to show him, hey, look, here's your baby. Under Roman law, Caesarion could not be considered a legitimate child or heir of Julius Caesar. Cleopatra and her party stayed in Caesar's villa outside the city. According to the Roman historian Pliny, a member of Cleopatra's court, who was present with her in Rome, was the astronomer Sosigenes. If I'm butchering the pronunciation, please forgive me. And again, according to Pliny, Sosigenes assisted Julius Caesar in the creation of the Julian calendar, which is essentially the calendar the world uses today. I know technically we use the Gregorian calendar, but that is just the Julian calendar with some minor corrections. It's unclear whether Cleopatra remained in Rome from 46 BCE until March of 44 BCE. She might have gone back to Alexandria for a period of time, but we know that she was in Rome on the Ides of March, which was March 15, 44 BCE, when Julius Caesar was assassinated by Brutus, Cassius, and the other conspirators during a meeting of the Senate. After the assassination, Cleopatra stayed in Rome for a little bit. It's unclear, but some historians have speculated that Cleopatra was hoping to have Caesarion recognized as Caesar's heir. However, Caesar's will named his grandnephew Octavian as his primary heir and his adopted son. I will have a lot more to say about Octavian later on. Caesar's death and the adoption of Octavian did not bode well for Cleopatra and Caesarion. Apparently, a month after Caesar's death, Cleopatra headed back to Egypt. After she returned to Egypt, Cleopatra had her brother, Ptolemy XIV, poisoned. How would you like to be a member of that family? Again, Cleopatra had to have a male co-ruler. So she elevated her 3-year-old son, Caesarion, to king. Although she officially had a co-monarch, Cleopatra was queen and the sole actual leader of Egypt. She merely needed a co-monarch who was male. It must be kept in mind that this situation could only exist as long as the Romans said she could reign over Egypt. Because of this, Cleopatra always had to keep an eye on what was going on in Rome. It's another long, complicated, and incredibly interesting story about the civil war after Caesar's death. But again, I'm trying to keep this focused on Cleopatra. So, for the sake of the Cleopatra story, I'm going to jump ahead a few years to 41 BCE. By this point, the Roman world was essentially being ruled by two men. Octavian governed the western half of what would soon be called the Roman Empire, and Mark Antony was in charge of the eastern half. And in case somebody wants to correct me, yes, there was this third guy named Lepidus, but he had essentially been marginalized at this point. In the summer of 41 BCE, Mark Antony summoned Cleopatra to the city of Tarsus, which is in modern-day Turkey. It appears that Mark Antony and Cleopatra had met in Rome when Julius Caesar was still alive, but it's unclear how much they interacted. But this meeting in Tarsus is when the whole love affair begins. Cleopatra's one remaining sibling, Arsinoe, had been in Rome in custody all this time since the Egyptian civil war. Since Arsinoe had sided with Cleopatra's brother in the Egyptian civil war, Cleopatra now asked Mark Antony to have her sister killed so she would not have any rivals for her throne. Antony granted this request and had the sister killed. Cleopatra now had no siblings alive. Before she left Tarsus, Cleopatra convinced Antony to come to Alexandria. In November 41 BCE, Antony arrived in Egypt and the love affair with Cleopatra grew. Fortunately for the couple, in the spring of 40 BCE, Antony had to leave Egypt for military and political reasons. He would not return to Alexandria for about 3 years. They did keep up a significant correspondence during his absence. More importantly, for cementing the relationship, was after Antony left in 40 BCE, Cleopatra gave birth to twins who Antony acknowledged as his children. The twins were a boy named Alexander Helios and a girl named Cleopatra Selene II. They were commonly referred to as Helios, which meant the sun, and Selene, which meant the moon. Just like Caesar before him, Mark Antony was married to a Roman woman while carrying on his affair with Cleopatra. Conveniently for Antony, his wife Fulvia died in 40 BCE, the same year Cleopatra gave birth to Antony's twin children. Antony faced the same problem that Caesar did. He could not marry a foreign head of state. The Roman people just wouldn't stand for it. So Antony continued his relationship with Cleopatra, but did not marry her even after Fulvia's death. Now, to complicate matters, Mark Antony then married another woman after Fulvia died. The reason for this marriage was political. Antony married Octavian's sister, Octavia. Yes, their names are Octavian and Octavia. The purpose of this marriage was to demonstrate to the Roman people that the alliance between Antony and Octavian was still in effect. This marriage occurred in October 40 BCE. Now, I'm skipping over some family details of prior marriages and other children. I'm just trying to keep this story about Cleopatra, Mark Antony, and their kids. Octavia eventually had 4 kids with Mark Antony, 2 sons and 2 daughters. Octavia lived with Mark Antony in Athens. At this time, Greece was a Roman province, and Antony was governing the eastern half of the Roman world from Athens. Nevertheless, Antony had to travel about the eastern Mediterranean since he was in charge of that half of the Roman world and would be away from Octavia for long periods of time. The marriage lasted 7 years. Antony divorced Octavia in late 33 BCE. Not surprisingly, Antony marrying another woman, Octavia, and having 4 children with her had a souring effect on his relationship with Cleopatra, but they still got back together. In 37 BCE, Antony summoned Cleopatra to a meeting in Antioch, which is in modern-day Turkey. Cleopatra brought the twins she had with Antony. This was the first time that Antony had seen the kids. Antony increased Cleopatra's domain. He gave Cleopatra additional lands that were now under her rule. These areas, which are in today's Middle East and Crete, were Roman provinces. When Octavian found out, Octavian scored points with the public and the Senate in Rome. Octavian argued that Antony was choosing a foreign queen over his fellow Romans. Octavian also pointed out that Antony was ignoring his virtuous Roman wife, Octavian's sister Octavia, for this Egyptian temptress. In 36 BCE, Antony took an army and invaded the Parthian Empire to the east. Meanwhile, Cleopatra returned to Egypt because she was pregnant with their third child. In the summer of 36 BCE, she gave birth to another son who, you guessed it, was named Ptolemy. This boy was given a second name of Philadelphus, Ptolemy Philadelphus. As I told you, they named all the boys Ptolemy. After a disastrous campaign in Parthia, Antony went to Alexandria to live with Cleopatra. In the autumn of 34 BCE, there was an event which has come down through history as the Donations of Alexandria. In a lavish ceremony, Antony and Cleopatra distributed lands which were held by Rome and Parthia to Cleopatra's children and granted those children titles reflecting that they were now the monarchs over these lands. At that time, Cleopatra proclaimed herself as the Queen of Kings. She also declared that her son Caesarion now held the title of King of Kings. In an incredible amount of naivete, Antony sent an announcement of the donations of Alexandria to Rome, requesting that the Senate confirm the donations. The Senate, of course, refused to do so. This attempted elevation of Caesarion was a direct threat to Octavian. Octavian's original base of power was the fact that he was the adopted son of the great Julius Caesar. In Roman times, grown men could adopt other grown men, and the Romans took this very seriously. Octavian was considered by all as Caesar's son. But since it was known that Caesarion was Caesar's biological son, Octavian took Antony's act of trying to legitimize Caesarion as a ploy to weaken Octavian's popularity with the soldiers and the public at large. This led to the final civil war of the Roman Republic. Officially, the Roman Senate declared war on Cleopatra. In reality, this meant that the forces of Octavian, representing the Senate and people of Rome, versus the forces of Antony and Cleopatra. Since this is a podcast about Cleopatra, I will skip most of the details of this conflict between Octavian and Antony. I'll proceed to the Battle of Actium, which was a large naval battle off the coast of Greece on September 2, 31 BCE. Cleopatra was with Antony in Greece at this time. She had even provided many of the ships for the battle. The short version is this. Octavian's forces won the battle. Most of Antony and Cleopatra's fleet was destroyed, and the majority of their soldiers on land eventually surrendered. Most of Antony's soldiers on land joined Octavian and increased his army. Antony and Cleopatra survived the Battle of Actium because both fled the fighting on ships headed towards Alexandria. After the showdown at Actium, Octavian had to resolve other matters before he chased down Antony and Cleopatra and the remnants of their military forces. When Octavian landed his army in Alexandria, Antony knew that it was all over. Antony had been led to believe that Cleopatra had killed herself. So on August 1, 30 BCE, Antony tried to kill himself by stabbing himself in the stomach. He did not die immediately, and while he was bleeding out, he was informed that Cleopatra was still alive. He asked to be brought to her, and he died in her arms. Cleopatra tried to negotiate with Octavian, but he did not succumb to her charms like Julius Caesar and Mark Antony. When she realized that he was going to take her to Rome to appear in his triumph, she decided to kill herself. By the way, a triumph is what the Romans called a special military parade celebrating a victory, which usually had prominent prisoners on display. Cleopatra died on either August 10 or 12, 30 BCE. There are two different versions of how she died. Both are the result of her attendants sneaking into her chambers, the thing that killed her. The most common version is that an extremely poisonous snake, known as an asp, was smuggled in and she let it bite her. Other sources say that she ingested poison. Either way, she committed suicide. And even though he was annoyed by this outcome because he was cheated out of parading Cleopatra through the streets of Rome in his triumph, Octavian ordered that Cleopatra be buried next to Mark Antony in a tomb which she had previously built. So what happened to her kids? Cleopatra had sent Caesarion to Upper Egypt to escape from Octavian. However, by August 29, 2 weeks after Cleopatra died, Octavian's forces had captured Caesarion and killed him. There could not be two sons of Julius Caesar. And what about the kids that Cleopatra had with Mark Antony? The other three children, Helios, Selene, and Ptolemy Philadelphus, were sent by Octavian to Rome to be raised by his sister Octavia, who had previously been married to Mark Antony. Octavian did not have people killed for spite or revenge. He only did it for political reasons. And what became of Octavian? Well, he became the first Roman emperor and ruled until he died August 19, 14 CE. He was given the title Augustus and is commonly known through history as Caesar Augustus. He's even mentioned in the Bible. The month August is named after him. He's probably the greatest political genius of all time. He created an empire which lasted for centuries and formed so much of the world we live in today. Well, that's it for this episode. Please subscribe to this podcast. Please like this and my other episodes. If you are listening on a podcast app like Spotify or Apple Podcasts, which allow for ratings, I would appreciate a 5-star rating. You can help increase the audience of this podcast. Please tell your friends, relatives, and coworkers to listen. Check out my website, historyanalyze.com, where you will find links to my podcast episodes, as well as fun items for history geeks like This Day in History, book recommendations, historical sound bites, historical photos, and links to supporting historical evidence. Thank you for listening. Catch you next episode.